deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hello listeners, and welcome to the Out of This World radio program with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in the Seattle area and beyond. We guarantee that we'll have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I'm sure it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. Today, we're very fortunate to have as our guest Michael Horn. He is the U.S. representative of a Swiss-based Plajarn extraterrestrial contact group associated with Billy Meier. For those of you who don't know Billy Meier has been in constant contact with the Plajarns since 1942. At the age of five, he was contacted by an elder Plajarn man who, with him and other ETs from the Plajarn constellation, have been in contact with him over the years. Michael will be giving us a very, very unique perspective into Billy Meier's life, as well as the messages that he's been given to give to humanity. The Plajarns, for those of you who don't know about them, are a human ET civilization. They live in the Pleiades constellation, which is approximately 60 light years from here. They are approximately 28,000 years ahead of us technologically and 8,000 years ahead of us spiritually. They've been through many of the trials and tribulations that the people on this planet are facing now. And so the Plajarns, Billy Meier, and certainly Mr. Horn, Michael Horn, has to say today will be very, very profound. And I guarantee you it'll be out of this world. Michael, are you there?
I'm here, Ted. How are you?
Okay, fine. How's our connection? Can you hear us all right?
Yeah, perfectly. How am I coming through? Is it okay?
Oh, fine. Just fine.
Good.
Well, tell us, Michael, a little bit about Billy Meier and how you got interested in this area.
Well, your introduction of him, started us off. He did start to meet with extraterrestrial human beings when he was 5 years old. This was back in 1942. This series of contacts that started when he was five have continued to this day. He still meets with these people. And what I generally like to tell people pretty much right off the bat, and I don't mind being challenged on it, is that this is the only authentic, actual extraterrestrial contact case that is taking place. And when people say, oh, how can that possibly be? Well, we can substantiate that. However, it's far more important that people, if they want to, that they can, check it themselves and look at the information and all that good stuff.
Great. And how did you yourself get interested in the Billy Meier case, Michael?
In 1979, I walked into a little bookstore in Los Angeles called the Bodhi Tree. It's recently been terminated, at least in its current location. And when I walked in, the first thing that caught my eye was this coffee table size photo book of the most remarkably clear daytime photos of actual craft, not lights in the sky, not little blips, but actual objects that had, contours and discernible features on them. And in this book, there was some information and explanation about the man himself, Billy Edward Albert Meier, and the investigation that was ongoing at that time into his claims, his contacts, and his evidence. And from there, things only got busier as I, came into contact with about 1,800 pages of the transcripts of his earlier conversations with the people from 1975 to 78. And since that time, so many more contact conversations have been transcribed. And I've been to Switzerland 14 times, spending time with Billy, his family, many of the over 100 witnesses to the craft, five other photographers. So that's kind of what got me started.
Amazing, Michael. I should tell you, too, that in December 1994, I flew to Zurich, and I went outside Zurich to visit Billy Meier. He wasn't there at the time, but I did meet with other people at his compound and got a considerable amount of photographs of the Plajarans and a bunch of other material. One thing I'm going to throw out this to our listeners, and then I want to ask you a very profound and interesting question. If this was some of the information, my listener friends, that Michael has is very, very interesting. And, for example, I'll just throw this out. If you could travel in time, and let's say, for example, instead of Seattle 2014, the date is 1930, and you're living in Paris, France, and you're now given information from someone who can travel into the future that in 1940, 10 years later, the Nazis are going to march into Paris, France, and take over your city and your country as well. If you could change things, what would you do differently? And I want to throw that out because I know, Michael, that Billy Meyer has talked about a possible Russian invasion from the island of Arkhangelsk on the Arctic Sea roughly 10 years from now. Would you mind if I asked you a question about that and what information you know about that?
Anything you want. Do you want me to start with a time travel question, or just tell me the question you want?
Okay.
It's all fair game.
Okay, yeah, just a time travel question regarding what you know of what Billy Meyer has said of a possible Russian invasion in the coming years.
Sure. Now, he did not give a date for it, but this is what we have. There's two things, and I have this on my website. I have more information in my blog. In 1987, Meyer specifically published information that foretold that the Russians were going to invade numerous countries in the future, that they would move their troops to a specific staging location for some of this, not for all of it, because some other areas are closer, but they would move their troops to a place called Arkhangelsk, and Arkhangelsk would be the staging area for their troops moving into Scandinavia. Now, they're also going, in the prophecies, in the Henoch prophecies, which I'm referring to here, the actual prophecies of the prophet Enoch. That's Henoch is the German for Enoch. They are also, according to these prophecies, going to invade Iran and Turkey, as well as a lot of places in Eastern Europe, then Scandinavia, and eventually coming over, as you mentioned, the Arctic, and coming through Canada, Alaska and Canada. And in 87, the information said that Canada would be drawn into this because of some earlier situations. Not earlier necessarily than 87, but earlier than the Russian attack. Now, I can flesh this out even more and tell you a couple more things. One is that in 1976, fully 11 years before he published the specifics on Russia's attack, he did publish a section of information foretelling that the Russians and Chinese were going to create and be allies, let's put it that way, and go on the military march. This means that when that occurs, there is going to be, and if that occurs, this is in the prophecy, that is going to be one heck of a an unpleasant time for a lot of the world. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I can't give you dates or anything like that, but I'll tell you this interesting little development. I reconnected with an old friend of mine I hadn't seen literally in more than 50 years. He's now a retired physician and physicist, highly religious and skeptical of, the Meyer case. I found that out when I reconnected with him, and he asked me what I was doing. So we set aside the Meyer case in particular, but we discussed for an earlier film called As the Time Fulfills. I asked him about the likelihood of extraterrestrial life, and he thought it was highly feasible based on physics and the commonality of certain elements throughout the universe, et cetera. In our new film, And Did They Listen?, we have a fuller interview with him, and he had received from me information that I just shared with you in part about the Russian, foretold Russian invasions. And I spoke with him on the phone, and he said, come over and bring your video camera. My formerly skeptical friend now says, and people can see this for themselves, he thinks Meyer's information is astonishing and amazing, that he should be taken seriously by the military, that the man is not any kind of a crackpot, clearly, because my friend, Dr. Weinstein, personally who had been in the military knows that this particular area of Russia makes the perfect staging ground, since it's under year-round cloud cover, and on, as I think you've seen the film, and you may know that he had rather favorable comments about Billy Meyer's prophecies, as unfortunate as they are.
Let me throw this out to my listener friends and to you, Michael, as well. Let's go back in time again. We're back in Paris in 1930, or you can say we're in the United States in 1930, and you've been given advanced knowledge 10, 11 years later of the attack on Pearl Harbor by the Japanese Imperial Navy in December 7th, 1941. How would you change your life? What would you do differently, you think? I'm throwing this out to my listeners as well, to think proactively is how could you, as individuals, change that possible future event? I don't think anybody, if we took a vote, certainly in the United States today, nobody would want war. Nobody wants the horrors of another war, especially a worldwide war, with any rationality. But if these things are forecast, what can we do? I'm not a doom and gloomer, by the way.
Right.
I think that our future is very bright. But if these things are predicted, what can we do to change that future to something better?
It's a great question, and the answer that came to me as you asked it is a little different than what I even expected I would say to you, because what popped into my mind was to say, and there's a couple components to it, I would say, look, first of all, let's just go a little local in a sense and say, you know, for you, you've heard that there's the possibility of a very severe earthquake off the Cascadian subduction zone, right?
Yes, we had John Hogue, Nostradamus guy, talk about that. He said the time date for him is 2017.
It could be, but I want you to know that in 2005, before Oregon State University did their study, mm-hmm. and this has been on my website since Meyer's published it, since Billy Meyer published it, in 2005, he gave the information that the Pléiaron gave him, and they said there is going to be, with certainty, a 9.0 earthquake. It is going to run for 5 minutes.
Oh, my God.
It will produce, that's unheard of. It's going to produce a mammoth tsunami. There will be another quake and a lesser tsunami following after that. It will be extremely, extremely devastating to that area, and its effects will be felt all the way down the West Coast. Now, why do I bring that up? As I said, Meyer published that in 2005. And now, 3 years later, Oregon State University came out with it. And now, again, of course, scientists are talking about it. John Hogue is saying he might have the date for it. I don't know that he doesn't. But let me go to the answer then about this. What would I do? It's what I'm doing right now, which is basically just simply trying to get as many people as possible to just look at the Meyer case and its information, not to have to say they believe it, not to, you know, proselytize or anything, but to go and look for themselves, which they can do for free, of course, off my website and those links from it, mm-hmm. in my blog and all that. But if people decide that there's something of value here, that there's something far beyond the disinformation of the UFO community that just pumps out utter nonsense all the time, maybe by people communicating with each other, as we now have a growing global community, small but growing, who do interconnect about the Meyer case, we could make some very significant changes globally in terms of these prophecies.
Well, Michael, pardon me for stopping you there. I do want you to continue. What I want to do is give out our website. Our website address for the program is www.outofthisworld1150.com, and right there you'll find on the left side Michael's information along with a link to his website. Michael, could you please give out your website information so people could also look it up directly?
Sure. Thank you, Ted. It's theyfly.com, T-H-E-Y-F as in Frank, L-Y.com, theyfly.com. And I have a theyflyblog.com. It's linked from the website, so you don't have to remember too many websites there. But, this is the way I would do it, and it's what I've been doing in one form or another since I started researching the case 35 years ago.
Well, the
Yeah,
I just wanted to interject something quick, Michael, and I want you to continue. The purpose of this program is not doom and gloom. The purpose of this program is to raise human consciousness, because I think humanity has a very, very bright future. Sure, we have some challenges ahead of us. If you look at the last century, there were just a series of wars, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf Wars. We had a series of wars, and look, where did it get us? I mean, we had a lot of misery, a lot of people dying. I don't want this century to be a repeat of the last century, because I think humanity, maybe I'm an idealist, but I am very positive and optimistic for the future to think that I think we have a very bright future ahead. And certainly, Michael, your work with Billy Meyer is a step in that direction. Go ahead. I didn't mean to.
Well, thank you, Ted, because actually you and I agree, and so does Meyer. It's just, you know, how we get there. Do we go there, get there more gracefully, or with more kicking and screaming? Mm-hmm. See, the Meyer case is not about UFOs. It's not about extraterrestrials. It's not even about the prophecies and predictions. These are mechanisms in place to bring us to something very, very specific, and that's the teaching in the case. It's called the spiritual teaching. Mm-hmm. It's not a religion. There are no beliefs. It's a teaching and a methodology whereby we learn how to think and think for ourselves, mm-hmm. and choose, you know, preferred lives and futures and all the rest, and do it in ways that are very solidly grounded in very, very ancient, in a very ancient teaching that Meyer simply is the latest prophet to bring us. In the past, six preceding times the teaching was brought, it was altered into one religion or another, and the essence of it and the truth of it has been severely diluted. That having been said, for when a person comes in contact with this information or the evidence, sometimes it's very startling, or it can trigger fear, it can trigger skepticism, all those things. And that's fine, because not everything is for everybody. For those who want to see what Meyer has described as what will be here in about 800 years, an enormously splendid and peaceful and harmonious world and peoples, we would just like to try to bring that forward a little more quickly, without the unnecessary pain and struggle that humanity doesn't really need to go through, unless we keep on not making the course corrections that are necessary for it.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michael, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, but the Pleiadians, I believe, are a member of what's called the Galactic Federation of Planets. I think that's correct, isn't it? They're part
it's
of a larger...
not quite. Here's what's happened, Ted, and this might help everybody to understand why we have been misled. Once Meyer came out in 1975 publicly, mm-hmm. with his contacts, mm-hmm. he was told to use the term Pleiadian for these people. And he asked, why? You're not Pleiadians. There's no life in the Pleiades. It's, you know, we know you live, you know, far beyond that in direction Pleiades, but many light years beyond it, and you're called Pleiaren. And they said, look, once you start to publish your information and your evidence, not only are you going to be attacked, not only are people going to try and kill you 22 times, I might add, but people are going to pop out of the woodwork claiming that they, too, are in contact with us, are channeling us, are dating us, whatever, and you know that this won't be true. And the way that we will separate the wheat from the chaff is by using the screen name Pleiadian, because anybody that, you know, starts speaking on behalf of and claiming and using that term, by doing so will immediately identify themselves as not being truthful. We, you know, and this is what's happened. So the Pleiaren people do belong to a federation, but it's not what's called the Galactic, you know, Federation or Brotherhood of Light or any of this other stuff. A lot of these other things got inserted by an extraterrestrial group that had been based for millennia underneath the Great Pyramid in Egypt. They were a splinter group of the Pleiaren who wanted to control this world, to rule over it as our gods and all the rest of it. And they did many things. They controlled people. They implanted thoughts of an Ashtar command. and the people were channeling Ashtar, who was a real person who is no longer alive for certain reasons. And so there's been so much static about this topic and about the Meyer case and about anything really extraterrestrial that right now, if you talk to many people about UFOs or extraterrestrials that are all into it, they think that you're talking about little big-headed, big-eyed creatures that supposedly abduct people and all sorts of grim stuff. That is part of the doom and gloom that we don't have any part of. This is not what is really going on. And it's why also the various disclosure movements about UFOs, unfortunately, are disinformation operations, intentionally or otherwise. So it's a big picture to start to, untangle and unravel the truth here.
Sure, sure. I understand completely, Michael. Well, I thank you so much for explaining that to my listening audience. There's a couple of questions. Actually, I have enough to fill up the next 5 hours, but I'll try to, Well, with luck, we hope to expand the program to 2 hours beginning May 1st, but I'll know better next week, but I'll limit it to 1 hour. A couple of questions, and I'm sure people have questions about this too. The BP oil disaster in Fukushima. Michael, you've come up with a new film called Will They Listen? And
Did They Listen? That's right.
And Did They Listen? I've listened to it 3 times. It's so good and so interesting. I do encourage you all to try to get copies of that movie. If you just contact Michael through his website, and you're welcome to order it there. But regarding the BP oil disaster, there was a quote in there that Billy Meyer had said that the organisms in the Gulf of Mexico will not regenerate for over 1 million years. Do you remember that comment?
Parts of the seas are literally dead at this point.
Okay.
They didn't specify, I think, the Gulf as the specific location, but parts of the seas are so dead it will be 1 million years. What they did say about the Gulf and about the BP disaster is that the toxins from the oil and from the solvent they were trying to use are so severe that they will continue not only to kill off sea life, but to contribute poisons into the wind, into the rain, and this will contribute to toxicity in many places. Just because it's no longer on our news, forgotten, it's out of sight, out of mind. It, along with Fukushima, they are enormous disasters. Can I just say one quick thing I want to say about Fukushima? But you mentioned the film. I want to make it easy for your listeners. This pops in my mind. If they want to get that film from my website and they just mention your name, Ted, or however you want it done, I will throw in another free full-length documentary on the Meyer case for your listeners. If they want that DVD, they get 2 for 1. Okay, so that's my promotion.
Yeah, just put my name, Ted, T-E-D-M-A-H-R, and you'll get the twofer.
Yeah, thank you. Even if you put Ted in the notes, there's usually a note section. If you order through the website, just put the word Ted or Ted M, you got it.
Ted's fine.
So it's a twofer. And I think you're going to – the other film – let's answer your question with Fukushima. Within days of the Fukushima event, and this is easily freely found on my website as well, Meyer had a contact with the player, and they told him, look, it's already within days. It is a super ultra worst possible case scenario. Reactor 3 has melted down. The toxins from this are already detectable in Central and Northern Europe. The radioactivity within 1 week of the event. And they said, this is so horrendous. Your scientists are not telling the truth. They won't even know the magnitude of this for a long time. But this stuff has entered via the sea. It is continuing via the air. It's going to come down in the rain. You're going to have genetic mutations and food chain disruptions for a long time to come. Now, again,
Millennia.
It isn't about doom and gloom. It's about, we were warned, Meyer warned in 1958. He said, all of these nuclear atomic energy plants must be disbanded. He said it again in the film. They told him, the Playaran told him, they said in their own world, long ago, when they were on the verge of doing their own, atomic energy, they lost 43 million people.
Oh, my God.
When there was accidents that happened to these plants. Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, and Fukushima are not the only accidents. They're only the ones reported. Mm-hmm. There have been lesser ones. These things leak. They're unstable. They stupidly put them on earthquake faults and coastlines. This stuff is terminal for humanity if we don't shut it down. Well, what are we going to do for energy? And you saw the film. Meyer was very clear. He says, you use deep geothermal energy. It's abundant.
Right. Did you know that between every day, thanks to those nuclear reactors, 450 tons, my dear listeners, of extremely highly radioactive water is being pumped daily into the Pacific. And now a huge water radioactive plume containing cesium-137, cesium-134, plutonium-224, strontium-90, iodine-131, you name it, it's coming here. It'll be off the shores of Washington in about 2 or 3 weeks. And on the phone for the past 2 weeks, I've been trying to get the governors of Washington, Oregon, California, Alaska, Hawaii, and the Premier of British Columbia interested in the issue. And I've been running into a very slow response. Most of them are not interested. I haven't heard from all the governors yet. I should reserve comment, but most of them haven't, either don't have the time or simply aren't interested. In this state, in Washington State, I went to the University of Washington and asked them if their radiation lab would test the waters off the Pacific. No, can't do it, unless you're a state agency. And I said, well, I'm a state taxpayer in this state, and I pay the taxes for the state and your university. Sorry, we don't consider you a constituent. Then I went to the Department of Health in Olympia, and I talked to their press information officer. It took him only 5 days to get back to me. And when he finally did, after having his coffee and donut, he said that he sounded like he'd been lawyered up. He said that there's been no credible evidence that any radiation harms anybody. And I stopped him right there, and I said, have you ever heard of Hiroshima or Nagasaki? But at any rate, so he's not doing any testing. I've had calls into the EPA. They talked to me last week. So far this week, they've refused to answer my numerous calls to their press officer. I don't know what he's scared about, but the Obama administration has refused to allow the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to do any testing. So I've sent off my own water samples, my own fish samples, to a reputable lab in the Midwest. The results will be done by the end of the month, and I will go live on air next month with those results. So I'm not going to stick my head in the sand.
You know, this is more – that's what these people are doing. I mean – it's like we don't see it, and this is big business. We're politicians, and our first, you know, concern is taking care of ourselves financially. It's so short-sighted, it's painful to contemplate. And I'll tell you something. For years, before Fukushima, I started taking a product called Modifilon, and I just, you know, put it on my website to sell to people because the Russians had created this product for the people of Chernobyl to get the radiation out of their bodies and, mm-hmm. and metals and things like that. So at the risk of sounding too promotional, I'll just tell people, you can see on my website if you think that's of any benefit for you, you could write me or anything like that. But this is so huge that there's no escaping what humanity is doing to itself. We will have to go through some bumps, to put it mildly, before we get to a golden age, you know, you know, Meyer and the player and say, you know, it's reincarnation is a fact of life. I like to say, don't worry about dying, you'll live through it. And a friend of mine added to that, he says, so, you know, something about make the world a better place to come back to. We have to start to think a little more about the big picture. We've been protected and sheltered from reality, in a sense, in this country to a large degree. Well, we've never, you know, I mean, it's the bubbles burst, folks. We have to start taking responsibility, gleefully, joyfully, rub our hands together, and let's go at it.
Well, I want to preface my remarks about Fukushima not being doom and gloom, but you know, I think that we should all get together and use our best efforts to try to clean up Fukushima as best as we can and stop the water that's being dumped into the Pacific, and then make it a worldwide problem, a worldwide effort to take care of it. Now, on my own part, I've contacted the Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, about Fukushima. I did that earlier this week. I'm having a special program on Fukushima with Dr. Helen Caldicott on April 4th. That's why I contacted these governors. I thought some of them might like to come on. I still may get one or two. I hope I do. so far that's where my efforts have been focused. But I think that if the world, if we all put our heads together, no problem is insurmountable. Hello, Michael, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I cannot understand how the Japanese government and that company have been allowed to let a gallon of that stuff into the sea, let alone thousands of tons of it every single day.
Well, I talk.
This is it's mind-boggling. And look,
it's insane.
You know, I'm sorry.
It's insane.
It's insane, and you know, the Pleiarians said to Bill, you know, the truth is harsh, and the people of Earth don't like the truth. They want to escape. They want. This is what they're saying. You know, they've tried to give us for over 60 years. Meyer has published. He's the first guy to warn of climate change and global warming.
And that was in 1958 or 51?
51 and 58.
Yeah, 51 was what?
Climate change.
63 years ago.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
He has been warning about this stuff. I mean, he warned about so many things people don't even know. In 58, he foretold two U.S. wars with Iraq. The second war would be led by a president who would be the son of a former president. He named AIDS by name, plastic credit cards, portable phones. He said every home would have a television and a computer and be electronically connected, interconnected around the world. I mean, 1958, this man is a prophet, and we don't want to hear about it. Why?
Well, you know, it's a little bit like Jack Nicholson's movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You can't handle the truth. That's what he said in the movie. I remember that.
Oh, man.
Well, I shouldn't say you can't handle it. Some of us can't, but I'm hoping that this program will enlighten many people. Michael, I'd like to take a quick break now, and what I'd like to do is to play a actually, you probably heard this, Michael, but it's a recording of a Plejaran beam ship taking off from the from Billy Meyer's farm in 1976. Have you heard that recording?
Oh, yeah. We have it on my website, and we also sell CDs of it because some people like to play it late at night in their cars with the windows rolled down. No, you know, stuff like that.
Sure. Well, anyway, my friends, I'm going to go ahead and have Eric, my sound engineer, play it, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is a actual recording of a Pleiadian shuttlecraft taking off from Switzerland in 1976. Okay, are you there, Michael?
I am here. I was getting very tempted to blast off myself.
I was about ready to say, "Scotty, beam me up," but I didn't. One thing I want to say before we go too much further, I always start with an introduction, but I forgot. I wanted to get going with Michael's material first, and I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, has also been a big supporter. The wonderful, beautiful energy of Seattle psychic Karen Wendelin, Vancouver psychic Candia Sanders, Portland energy healer Dewey Myers, and of course my angelic celestial and earthly family, as well as the Quest Bookstore in Seattle, the Leading Edge Bookstore in Seattle, and the Vajra Bookstore in Seattle. Our upcoming guests, my friends, will include Dr. Helen Caldicott, who will be appearing live by telephone from Sydney, Australia, to discuss the Fukushima nuclear accident on April 4th, James von Prague, one of the world's most famous psychics, on September 26th, Susan Miller, one of the world's most famous astrologists, who will be coming on the program live from New York City on April 11th, Uri Geller, one of the world's most famous psychics, who will be coming on the program live from London, England on March 28th. Professor David Jacobs from Temple University in Philadelphia, who's one of the world's foremost UFO researchers. For a list of upcoming guests, please see our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. For those who'd like to call in, Michael, would you like to take some questions from listeners if they have any?
Absolutely, sure.
Okay, my friends. Well, our phone numbers here are, we've got two numbers. One is, hold on, let me grab it here. The toll-free number is, thanks, Eric, is 1-888-298-5569. That's 1-888-298-5569. And our regular landline number is 425-373-5527. Again, that's 425-373-5527. One thing I'd love to get jumped back into, Michael, are your what you see for perhaps for the Seattle area, the West Coast, and the United States in general in the coming years.
Well, look, I mean, Meyer has, you know, long said, by the way, I should add this, you may know this, Ted, I don't know, but he photographed the coming San Francisco earthquake.
He did?
Yes.
When did
in 1978, and I have this info on my website as well. In 1978, when investigators Wendell Stevens, Lee, and Britt Elders were in Switzerland during the first year or so of their investigation, one day they were in the kitchen with Billy and several of the other Swiss people, and somehow the conversation came about San Francisco earthquake, and Billy said, wait a minute, I have something to show you. He left the room and came back with one of those little yellow envelopes that we were familiar with for Kodak photographs.
Right.
And he pulled out 11 photographs, not paintings, not drawings, photographs that were then spread out on the table for the investigators and the other people to see. Wendell Stevens, and for those who don't know, Wendell Stevens was a retired lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Air Force who began in 1947 to research UFOs for the Air Force. He was a remarkable guy, a good guy, and he did, you know, profound work on this case. Now, he's looking at these photos, and they are looking at San Francisco, which is at this point, when they, in these photos, almost completely in ruin. Smoke, fires, buildings are collapsed. The Transamerica building, the top of that pyramid, is cracked, and on the ground, buildings are falling into each other. And they're looking at this, and they're trying to figure out, because Billy will not tell them when it happens. So they look, and they look at the cars on the street, mm-hmm. and they notice that a lot of the cars have extensive glass, large front windshields, some of them leading up into the... and that many of the cars do not have external projections, meaning no side view mirrors. Now, if you go and you start looking online, you will find that companies like Toyota, Mercedes, and others already have concept cars with no external side view mirrors, and that many cars now already have the internal camera for backing up. So we will have, instead of the external rear view mirrors, side view mirrors, it will all be camera stuff so that you'll be able to look centrally in the car and see what's coming up behind you. This means that in 1978, when Stephen said, these cars don't look anything like the cars of today, you know, the big boats with all the fins and everything else, they're smaller and rounder. We already have the smaller, rounder cars with more glass and more windshield. All that we're missing right now are those, you know, enough cars, you know, many cars, without the side view mirrors. In my opinion, we're closing in on that time. A word, you know, the player, Meyer said it many times, the word to the wise has to be sufficient. Do not live near coastlines. Live a minimum of 70 meters above waters, would be they lakes, rivers, or oceans, because the future brings to us severe tsunamis, seaquakes, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions. 75% of the coming environmental changes, and the ones we're in now, are man-made in their origin. And we're going to have typhoons with winds approaching 400 miles an hour. This is what we are told is coming. This is hard for us to grasp. I get it. I know it. I know lots of people that don't want to move out of L.A. or San Francisco and Seattle and the rest of it. So it's an individual choice where we either sit down and start considering some options for ourselves and going inward and trying to get our own guidance, or we just pretend like we haven't heard this stuff.
Well, Michael, I have an idea I'd like to throw out to you and our listeners. Isn't this, I consider the planet a living entity. The Earth is a living entity. And I think that, of course, we've polluted the atmosphere here and done a lot of environmental damage. But if we were to change our attitude about the planet and about each other to one from conflict to caring and loving and trying to take care of the planet better, these things that you've said, they don't necessarily have to happen, do they? I mean, they all depend upon choices.
Some don't have to happen, and some will, because there's two things, Ted. There's prophecies and predictions.
All right.
Prophecies are nasty events that are foretold that will happen if we don't change our direction, if we don't make course corrections and make them in time. Predictions are written in stone, and most of the predictions, you know, we might say they deal with cosmic events like this particular asteroid or comet is coming through here, it's external, we have nothing to do with it, or there will be certain eruptions or certain earthquakes that are not connected to human activity, although more and more are. So the prophecies that go past the point of no return become predictions. There are some things, as I say, you know, the truth is harsh. There are things that are no longer avoidable. It is just that way. Does it mean that we all have to start, you know, throwing our hands up in the air and screaming and running for the hills? No. We may want to get out of the way of certain foreseeable things. We may want to just clean up our thinking and do what you're talking about with more and more people starting to balance out and be, you know, work more in an environmentally conscious way. But some things, when you have Fukushima with thousands of tons of this junk going in and the continuing air pollution and the stuff that's in the water from BP, there is a price that we're going to pay. We've got to be, you know, that there's a term, I shied away from it for a time, but it might be appropriate. You know, be spiritual warriors, if you want to put it that way. In other words, a true warrior knows that there's a battle, and they don't dwell in fear, and they don't dwell in hate. They don't hate their opponents or enemies or those who have, you know, done the things that they have to stand against. They task themselves to support that which they prefer, and they stand to defend against that which is the onslaught of what is negative. But it's done from what Meyer calls, in terms of thinking, not positive thinking, neutral positive thinking. And this is one of the core elements in the spiritual teaching, where we get to see things as they are, and we get to balance that, the negative and the positive, and then choose the preferred positive and move towards it. We can't pretend that things don't exist that we don't like.
Well, I'd love to say something on that note, Michael, and that's that the problem with the Fukushima radiation is that radiation in general, you can't smell, taste it, see it, or feel it. But it's there, and it can and will kill you. It is off the coast now, and it's going to be hitting our beaches probably in a couple of weeks from what the scientists say. Some scientists say that the radioactive plume of water coming to hit the Washington shores is 10 times more radioactive, contains 10 times more radiation than all the bombs that's been dropped since Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II in Japan. And I find it incredible that some of our so-called scientists say that there's going to be no health effects when there is obviously that's going to happen.
You know, Ted, this is part of what I think is going to lead to something else that has been prophesied in the Meyer case. And this was only recently published. It was told to Meyer many years ago, and they waited on it. And that is that we are coming to a place that is going to, and, well, I'll back up. In 1987, in that same prophecy about the Russians, Meyer also foretold two coming civil wars to the U.S., and that this was pretty seriously going to happen. And Playaron recently told him that by 2020, we may more than likely have anarchy in the country. Yeah. With the breakdown of trust in public officials, with people so invested only in feathering their nests and filling their pockets and, you know, just abdicating any responsibility to the public good, with the polarization of people politically, religiously, culturally, we're pushing ourselves in those places. And you add to it when it will be undeniable, when that stuff starts hitting the shores and people are going out with their own Geiger counters or collecting samples like you did, and you know, and the watchdogs that are not going to be silenced. This is not good stuff. And it's all the more reason that we gently, I'd say, look at this material, look into what they advise us to do for ourselves, how to think our way through and out of many of the problems, and yet also how to think so that we can handle that which is going to be inevitable, those things that we don't prefer. How do we deal with them that we're not taken by surprise? There should be no more surprises. For those who've been following the Meyer material, there aren't too many surprises left. Mm. But this is not meant to harm or blame us. This information has been intended to help us without interfering directly with us, without coming to save us, because no one's going to do that. So you're a voice. You're trying to get responsible people, so-called, to be responsible. More power to you. More power to you, because this is what we need for people, each in their own way, to take responsibility.
I did have a interesting phone conversation on Wednesday a couple days ago with an assistant to the Japanese ambassador to the United States in Washington, D.C., and they're very concerned about Fukushima, but they're sort of at a loss as to what to do. You know, the Japanese like to be self-sufficient.
To a fault.
Yeah, to a fault. And we all do. A lot of us, that's the American spirit. Pull ourselves up by our bootstrap, rugged individualism which built this country. But there comes to a point where you need help. You need other people's help to resolve a problem. And so in my own small way, I've been trying to bridge that gap and try to get a catalyst going. I mean, if you look at it, Gandhi was only one man. Leonardo da Vinci was one man. JFK was one man. Robert F. Kennedy was one man. And so was Martin Luther King, who was honored in the Seattle area. And I believe that all of us have that infinite creative spark within us to do great things and to change society for the better. We don't have to put up with the things which have been predicted and prophesized. We can have a very bright future and a very wonderful future if only we take those individual steps. For those interested in coming on board with me and organizing my April 4th program for Fukushima, please send me an email to outoftheisworld1150@gmail.com. I really appreciate your support. Once again, I've talked to the scientists at the Washington Department of Health, talked to the scientists at the University of Washington. They don't consider it a problem, so they're not testing it. And I'm afraid for the future when you know the grandchildren of today are born with six eyes and they die of leukemia after reaching age 10, that things could have been done differently today to save them that kind of horrible future. It doesn't have to happen.
Yep. You're so on it with this. I mean, look, Ted, we're all in it together, and it's a combination of individual self-responsibility, that rugged individualism, with cooperation.
Right.
You know, each person has something to others, and each of us has to be responsible. We have to respond, be able to respond in ways that are, you know, integral and compatible with our own being. Mm-hmm. We need not take on all of the weight of the world as individuals. And with your call to action, people can join together. And this is going to be a horrendous, you know, thing. It's coming our way. And we have to buck up here, you know, do what we can. And it's for the long range. You know, this is a fundamental, it's revolutionary. You know, I have this film. You can watch this film for free from my website. It's called The Silent Revolution of Truth. It's the first one that we put out in 2008 with a partner of mine on it. And it's about the Meyer case. All of this is about Meyer. In the film, As the Time Fulfills, I have 55 specific examples of Meyer's prophetic, scientifically accurate information. There's no doubt here. So there's not enough people who are doing this clarion call, who are reaching out and wanting to wake up their audiences and say, listen, let's not just be fascinated with, you know, alternative information. Let's rub our hands together, roll up our sleeves, and work together, because this is going to affect us, whether we like it or not.
What do you do? You know, I have to tell you this little story. I was in a fast food restaurant, Burger King, last year. And I saw these little children running around, and I said to myself, what kind of future do they have in this planet? And they could have a really good future, or they could have a future that's not so nice. And I'd like to choose and I think it's inherently selfish of this generation to put their needs ahead of everybody else's with respect, for example, to to radiation and nuclear energy, that to play with an energy source that can literally can have effects for the next 10,000 years of radiation.
Yep.
I think that's the ultimate selfishness.
It's greed and selfishness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, okay, you know, look, you are honestly the first guy that I've talked to, the first interview I've done, who's organizing something pertinent to doing stuff about it. And for that, I go, well, thank goodness. Thank goodness. And that is, you know, well, as I said in the beginning, I'm not here just to talk about UFOs, extraterrestrials, prophecies, and predictions.
Sure.
There is a teaching here, and the teaching's about self-responsibility. Okay, that's what you're talking about.
Right.
Let's not be selfish. Let's not be short-sighted. These are the children, the grandchildren, you know, the future of this world. And folks, you know, and we come back in some form, too, to inherit it. You know, let's not be short-sighted. But, you know, I will want to know what happens with your project and your efforts and those people that, you know, are going to line up with you.
Michael, could you please speak up, my friend? We're getting a little muffled there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this any better?
Yeah, much better. Much better. Thank you. There was one comment Dr. Caldicott made at a conference in New York City last year on the health effects of the Fukushima nuclear radiation. She said that in six or seven generations, with the amount of radiation that's already been discharged from Fukushima in Japan, due to the genetic effects of the radioactive materials, the Japanese will no longer look human. And if that's not a wake-up call, I don't know what is. I mean,
here's something most people don't know that's in the Meyer case, because they write about very, you know, political and all sorts of stuff. We are already, we are still having the genetic and mutational effects of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Here's something
that's
Meyer
true.
Was told. You know, I don't know if you know this, but Meyer was told by the Pleiaren that all of our concerns about, you know, lung cancer being tied to smoking, while there is some connection, the majority of lung cancer is from the radiation that is remaining from Nagasaki, Hiroshima, atomic power plants, hospital leakages, and this is covered up. See, Meyer revealed information about NSA and the Windows connection and the government in 2006. He's way ahead of all this stuff because these people can look in and see it. So we're catching up slowly with them, very slowly in many cases.
I spoke to Helen Caldicott here a few weeks ago by telephone from Sydney, Australia, and she told me a very interesting thing. Our so-called safe radiation levels here in the United States, issued by our federal government, are based upon the radioactive fallout from the numerous atomic tests that this country did back in the 50s and early 60s. They assumed that that radiation dumping over all of our American cities in the Midwest and the West was perfectly safe, the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? Well, a lot of those people died of cancer, genetic deformities, and all kinds of health problems later. Unfortunately, those standards are now used to measure, guess what? If they do any testing, they say that, there is Fukushima radiation coming over the air of Seattle, but it's perfectly safe because it's below this limit. It's something like 7,000 becquerels, and you're guaranteed to get your chances of cancer go rocketing very, very high after getting that much exposure. And I bring that up because up in British Columbia, BC Fisheries, to their credit, have been testing sea bass off of Vancouver, British Columbia, and they found that the fish up there are thousands of times higher in becquerel content for cesium-137, which is directly attributed to Fukushima. Now the Pacific Ocean is a big place. And think of this. If you fly from here, for example, to Tokyo, it's about 12, 14 hour one way. I've been on the flight before. Think of it. All the way from Tokyo to here in the West Coast, 8,000 to 10,000 miles across open Pacific, it's polluted. The whole ocean is polluted. And for the radiation from Fukushima to get to this point, from here to Japan, it's a mess.
You got it. And to add to it, in 1975, Meyer was told that the radiation from our atmospheric A-bomb tests is what has contributed to the greater ozone hole damage. That wasn't confirmed until 1988. It was the first article that I read that I suddenly realized that the Meyer case wasn't just about UFOs and extraterrestrials. This was about our future survival. He pinned this stuff down. I opened a newspaper, 1988. I'm reading. I'm thinking, how come I already know this information? I reach under the bed, pull out the 1,800 pages, and there it is.
Michael, we
told him.
My friend, we've got a less than a minute left. Would you like to make any parting, have any parting thoughts to our listeners?
Just again, want to offer them, it's a two-for-one. Just mention Ted. If you want to get as, and did they listen, my new film, and I have a website full of free stuff. I have a blog with over 240 free articles. So help yourself if you don't, if you're not ready for films, but if you want to hear Myers himself, if you want to, you know, get tons of information, including stuff on the spiritual teaching, we have it on the new film.
Okay.
It's just out now, and that's my offer to you. And I thank you enormously, Ted, for having me on, and I'd be glad to try to answer any people's questions that I can.
Okay, well, we're running out of time, my friend, but just email them to me, and I'll forward them on to Michael. My email address is outoftheisworld1150@gmail.com. Next week, we'll be having Uri Geller on live from London, England, one of the world's best psychics. And I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Take care.